Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We made this.
And welcome to Rarely Going, the Star Trek animated podcast here on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Kurt North, and I am here for the first time for this season to talk about the show Star Trek Lower Decks. Joining me this week is Brandy Jacola, and is here to talk about some Lower Decks with me. Brandy, how are things?
Oh, things are great. We'll just go with that.
We've got Star Trek.
Yes.
Do we need to say any more?
No. That's how many weeks did we go between the end of Strange New Worlds and the beginning of Lower Decks? Because it seems like a year.
About 4 weeks.
Oh, it was longer here. I think it was more like 7 weeks, I want to say.
What were we like when we didn't have it for years, Brandy? That's what I'm asking.
Well, that's the thing. We're so spoiled now. And now this is the new normal. And so when they interrupt that, and I don't get my Star Trek every week, I'm not a happy camper, but it's okay because I just rewatched all of Strange New Worlds again while I was waiting.
Yeah, that's the best way to go. Yeah, because Strange New Worlds for us, we were behind schedule. Mm. So we've had this whole Paramount Plus fiasco where Strange New Worlds obviously wasn't out, and Discovery was ended up on a free-to-air channel that you can get on your Samsung TV, and they were old school, Brandy. It was appointment television. It was appointment television. You had to literally be there at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday night or a Sunday when it repeated. It was like going back to the 80s and 90s. It was just really strange.
I don't miss that. I don't miss appointment television. I mean, Star Trek in our house was appointment television. We watched it as a family, but I don't miss that. I don't miss the, oh no, I missed the original airing because they preempted it with a sporting event. And now I've got to try and find it on a repeat. Oh no, I've just completely missed it. Oh, okay. Okay. I'll just wait for another, 10, 15 years till the DVDs come out. It's fine. I don't miss that.
I'm on another podcast, which is the Red Dwarf podcast, a sci-fi comedy show over here. And
I know Red Dwarf, sir. Okay. Lister, Cat, Rimmer, I know. Holly, I know the show, baby.
Good, good. But the first two seasons were only shown on the BBC in the first, and then it was one of those, as you say, we didn't get to see them for years afterwards. The VHSs came out during Series 6, so it was kind of like a bit higgledy-piggledy and stuff like that. So definitely don't miss that, but we do get to see... At the moment, now we do have Paramount Plus and we do have Amazon Prime, because we're still in a bit of a weird zone in that we get ours on Amazon Prime. We do have some of that, but at least it's streaming television and we're able to watch it when we need to. So we are talking about Lower Decks. We're talking this week about Season 3, Episode 3, Mining the Mind's Minds. I'm glad I got that through. it was written by Brian D. Bradley and director was Phil Mark Sagadraka. Before we go into that, though, there's been two of episodes of the season. What have you made of them so far?
Loved them. Loved both of them. I actually, just in the spirit of previous Trek two-parter season ender things, I figured that they would resolve the whole Freeman being put on trial thing in that first episode. And I was pleasantly surprised that I was right. So I thought it was great. It was hilarious that that's the B story, really. I mean, yeah. The A story is them trying to help. And it was just, when they said they were going to Bozeman, Montana, I'm like, oh, please tell me you're going to make a crap load of First Contact references. And they open the scene and this music wells up and I'm just like, my heart, I can't take it. Loved it. And also loved the last episode because there is nothing I love more than Boimler getting chased through the corridors and rooms of the Cerritos by someone he agreed to let hunt him and just screaming so much, so much.
Yeah.
Poor Jack, his throat must have been raw after doing all the screams.
Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? I love the fact that they when he first went to the, you know, the first ball boy machine, they pick him up and Jack goes, you could join our choir. You could be a soprano. And I thought, yeah. Oh, brilliant. I've enjoyed both episodes. I, like you say, with the Bozeman stuff was, oh, I was just like, oh, fantastic. First Contact. It's probably my either first or second favourite movie of the franchise. Mm. So I'm like, oh, come on, let's go and do this. And, you know, they're just a marvellous, marvellous episode. I love the fact that the Vulcan ship was a swing.
I know, right? Can you imagine Vulcans visiting and going, this is illogical. Just, but inside they're going, are you freaking kidding me with this? Yeah. You turned the Teplana Hoth into a freaking swing set. Okay.
Yeah, it was amazing. I wasn't as infused with the second episode. I still enjoyed it. I still thought it was great. But as you say, with the chasing scene and the hunted scene, the fact that, you know, Freeman's like walking through as well, and he's like saying, "Get help, save me!" And she's like, "Oh, you're doing that? Oh, that's fine. Carry on as you're going. Bye."
Yeah, we have to respect his culture.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. And the subversion, as I say, in the first episode was great. What about this episode then? Mine in the mind's mind. I've got it in there again. I'm going to try and hit it in three times. And maybe Boimler might appear from behind me or something. What did you think to this episode in general before we start talking about it in more detail?
I actually really enjoyed it. I wasn't sure where it was going. And as we get into the discussion, I will talk about the things that it reminded me of, not in a bad way,
okay,
in a good way. And things that brought to mind. And one of them, my husband even said at the same time that I was about to say it. And because we do that a lot, it's like almost like we're psychically connected. He will say something and I'm like, I was just thinking that. This episode was very interesting because there's a lot of imagery that I am uncomfortable with. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a criticism. It's just like, no on the clowns. No.
Right.
So much no.
When they're on the clowns with bat lifts.
With bat lifts for arms. Yes. So I didn't know clowns could get worse. And they did. And they just, no.
Okay. So you're not a fan of the Voyager episode then as well? Yeah, no.
No.
Okay. Let's not recall that. Let's quickly go on to something else.
Yes, please. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was going out of the three episodes so far. I think this one and the first one are my favourites, definitely. I'm really enjoying some of the character pieces. Like, for example, yes. Tendi. I'm going to talk about Tendi in a lot of detail, I think, in this episode. And just the comment that was made, and I'll bring this back up later, in the first episode where she hadn't left San Francisco and hasn't gone out and actually done things. And just her kind of the studying aspect of it. I really find that a good thing to play with. And I think that her getting this, this kind of science officer training is actually working really well to kind of expose that and expose some of the inadequacies in the characters. And I think that even, the way that this episode plays around with that, but also like sort of the standing nature of the Cerritos as well, because which we'll get to about its Enterprise illusions. I thought really worked well. So I think overall this is another great episode for me, and agreed. I really liked it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. I was excited. I was waiting for Tendi to start that training and what see what that would entail, and to end up with a mentor like McGlimo. Oh, Paul F. Tompkins, you absolute gem of a man. You do that character so well. But it's, yeah, I was excited to see how that started because she was so enthusiastic about it. And she is that person, like Ta'ana said at the end of last season, that she masters everything she sets out and takes on. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, let's see you master science now. And doesn't go the way she wants.
And we will. We'll talk about that in a very quick second, actually. So let's go and talk about this episode in more depth now. Basic premise of this episode is that the USS Hood, which is what looked like an Excelsior class in the episode, is we're on Genghis 4, and we've got some tentative peace with the Scrubble and the scientists on the planet. The opening credit for this was the green ball and the psychic ball thing at the beginning. What did you make to the opening credit with this? Because it was before the USS Hood was there, so we're just seeing this strange thing, this psychic link thing, and obviously looks like it's opening up to desires, and this statue then appearing from the scientists that we don't quite know yet.
Yeah, it was very Trek. It was without actually being a ripoff of any one episode. It actually made me think of more than one episode, one of which is an Enterprise episode, but it wasn't like a green glowing ball. And it was something that, you know, who was it that was, it was that Archer that was dealing with that? Gosh, it's been a long time. I need to rewatch Enterprise, y'all. So, but it was a shape-shifting sort of thing that tapped into, you know, your mental state, your dreams, hopes, etc. So I thought, yeah, you obviously can't believe that's really your grade school teacher. So, but apparently it maybe, you know, and they don't go into real depth on this. It's like maybe it triggers certain dopamine levels or endorphins or whatever, that you just are so exhilarated by what you're seeing that you don't realize danger. This is bad. Yeah. This shouldn't be happening. So, yeah. And then I thought, of all the things that I thought were going to happen, I did not pick turn to stone. So that was a surprise.
Yeah, and I thought that was a good cold open. And as you say, in typical Star Trek fashion, like I was just mentioning there with the Hood and the Cerritos, and I didn't catch the name of the ship, actually, the second Kali class ship. Did you catch the second that name?
Yeah, I did, but I can't remember it. Carlsbad, because they're all named after cities in California, and Carlsbad is definitely a city in California. I used to work for a catalog ordering company many, many embarrassingly long years ago, and one of our areas, we had all of California. We got all of California's calls, so I know where things are in California, despite having only been there a few times and not seeing everything firsthand. But Carlsbad, definitely one of those cities. So I think it was Carlsbad. It was a C word. I know it was that. So I'm going to go with Carlsbad. And if I'm wrong, well then, sorry.
It sounds about right, because I wasn't aware. I didn't even think about how they were naming them. Obviously, I know it's a California class ship. I just wasn't aware of that kind of remit of it. So if it is the Carlsbad, then great. It's about this tentative piece. So the Excelsior class USS Hood disappears off into the distance. We are left with the two ships there to talk about the rest of the episode. Ransom, what have you made to Ransom in these last couple of episodes? Because he was a bit foolhardy last episode with swapping the team around. And obviously this one he's talking about scientists and them all being weirdos and stuff. So what are you making to Ransom and some of the comments that he's making?
Oh, Ransom is Ransom. He's not any different than he was originally presented to be. So nothing that comes out of his mouth ever surprises me. What does surprise me is I cannot picture those words coming out of Jerry O'Connell's mouth, because this voice is so different than his voice that I forget that it's him. He's just really good at it. Jerry, you're really good at it, man.
I just wanted to maybe go at this from a theme perspective or a character perspective. And I think we should maybe talk about Tendi first and her journey. Because we started talking about that at the beginning of the hour. You mentioned about the mentorship and the way that this plays throughout this episode with, you know, Dr. Megan Lamimo not being the right person for the role. And we get just, I think this is amazing for an animation to get this across at the end when we see Tarn. Actually, you see Tendi looking over in the middle distance at Tarn going, that's my mentor. Mm-hmm. That's who that is. I thought was incredible. And I think Tendi's story in this is really strong, and it works in the concept of it's all ship-based and it's a very kind of 90s Berman era kind of Trek idea of, you know, just a growth within the character. And what did you make to that and how Tendi was dealt with in this episode?
I love how she was just expecting to take a test and, you know, that was going to be your training. And so she's getting, which is interesting because you would think with her experience being in medical that she would understand that it wasn't all about the tests. It was about practical applications of your skills. And maybe she just didn't think of it that way because science is not as hands-on as far as, you know, medicine can be, but medicine is still a science. So I don't think she was equating those things in her mind. And so she was so, I don't know, taken by surprise, taken aback when she realized she couldn't just take a test and she actually had to interact with people and do stuff. The interesting thing is I think that the first thing that Miglimo sets her on to do to, you know, basically make the captain listen to her about science, be science's voice. It sounds hokey, but he was right about being, you know, finding a way to be that person because she's a people pleaser. And I think he knows that. And so this was attacking one of what he might have seen as not a weakness per se, but maybe a possible liability with being a chief science officer. He's still full of himself, though, that Miglimo.
Well, he delivers probably my favorite line of the season so far, in when he goes, have you ever trained as a science officer? Absolutely.
No.
The pause was just comic timing. It was perfect. Mm. Just the way, because the absolutely was delivered in such a great, absolutely, not, no.
Yes.
I just love that. I was on the floor laughing, and I don't often do that. And I just found, I don't know why, I do not know why, I just found it absolutely hilarious. Talking about the, as you say, the science aspect and things that she has to go through, because by the time of the end of the episode comes, you've got Mariner on the ship at the very end. There's this massive like fight between them with the pyramid and who's going to keep it, and Tendi's trying to get her words across, because during the episode we see that, don't we, where she's trying to get the conversation going with Freeman and it's not getting there. And as you say, she's quite a timid person in that way. Mm-hmm. And the assertiveness really needs to come through. The way that they designed that was that it was almost like when Mariner came up with, I think her name was, Kern, the other officer. And when she comes to Kern, you expect Mariner to say something, and it's just the way that Tendi just like slams it across on the floor and reveals the communication device in there. And for me, that is the great way to go about it, that we see those three or four steps of Tendi's kind of a character arc in this episode.
Yeah. Well, we know she can be aggressive when she needs to be, because we saw that last season when they went on girls trip. So, so we know that she can, but we also know that she doesn't like being that person. That's not what she wants to do. But there are times where you have to be the voice of science. You have to get people's attention. Mm. And if breaking things, sometimes, I mean, I guess she took that literally when he says sometimes, to Anna says sometimes you have to break something so that you can fix it. She did that literally.
It is literally making an omelet.
I just now realized she did that literally.
Well, that's what I was getting to, but you know, you beat me to the punch there.
Oh, Oh gosh, I've seen the episode twice, but it just I should have picked up on that before. But now that I'm talking about, because this is my first time talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that's how that came out. Sorry, I totally stole your thunder. My apologies.
No, it's fine. Yeah, mine was going to, well, it obviously, it came out better that way because I love to see a reaction and realization of the plot. So that's great. Because obviously, you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. It's that whole omelette. That is Hamlet. This isn't Hamlet.
And amulets also. Actually, amulets can be broken. Sometimes amulets have things inside them. You need to break them to get it out. Sorry. Wow. Yeah, that's my specialty, sir. My specialty is tangents.
As you say, having the fact that she does actually end up doing that, and I think in the grander scheme of that as well, just the fact that you can't go around thinking you're being perfectionist or like sort of as you say taking the tests, like in San Francisco, like I mentioned at the top of the hour, where. In Cisco's restaurant, she says that she's never been out of there. She's never gone to the Bozeman, for example. She's never done anything other than just the actual Starfleet headquarters and the academy. And it's not a rounded individual in that way. And I just like the way that the team have actually built that to be the different characters in different ways are not that full rounded characters. I have to sort of manipulate them to a degree to get where they are, and Tendi is a perfect example of that. And as you say, from going back to the last couple of seasons to the first episode here, that it's showcasing that, and it's showcasing that Tendi really needs to get out of her skin to really develop as a character.
She does, and I'm glad that she's doing that, and I look forward to seeing her growth as this training progresses, and hopefully, Miglimo will stop taking the credit for everything. So,
I can't see that lasting.
No. I'm wondering how long it the rotations are, because it would seem to me that you don't have just one person doing that training, that she would kind of rotate through a number of different programs, right? Because science is broad. It is not, there's so many different departments just within science.
Yeah, unless it's literally as it's being a mentor, as in he's just the one that's going to be guiding her through, just like touch base, you're going off into the engine room, you're going off into the transporter room, you're doing this week, you're going to entomology tomorrow, and then literally feeding that back. But it does seem to be taking up that to Arn stuff, that there's going to be that conflict between, and hopefully they will pick that up and run with that, because that in itself is an interesting one, to have a conflict within the team. And to Arn is not someone you want to get in conflict with, I don't think.
No. She will scratch your eyes out.
Yep. Or when medically needed, she will cut your foot off so it can grow back again.
Mm-hmm. Girl, my new one. It's probably best to just start over, Why she wanted to do it with a chainsaw, though, I am not certain. Surely a laser scalpel would be much more efficient. Maybe she just really enjoys her work a little too much.
Yeah. There's definitely something happening in that scene. Okay, here we go. Come on, let's go. Away you go. So... and it's just, I love the way they actually use that scene as well, where he's like, you were just doing that to help her, weren't you? You weren't being realistic about it. You weren't going to really cut my foot off. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, I knew she was really going to do it.
Oh, we all knew she was going to do it. I don't think he did, but we all knew it was coming.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
She doesn't tease. She doesn't tease about anything. As if she says she's going to do something, is she going to do it?
Yeah, exactly. What about Captain Freeman and Captain Mayer then? Because they have an interesting back and forth conversation. He's someone that's going to be on the fast track, and soon he'll be captain of a galaxy class starship, is what it's said. You know, it's fairly straightforward scenes for them, but there's this interplay between the young and old, you know, the people who have lived in the world of the universe, and someone who's up and coming who thinks they know all that. What did you make to those little elements in this episode?
Well, they were both trying too hard to be gracious, and it ended up becoming a competition about who was more gracious and how it was going to be perceived by other people, which, you know, that was one of the things that the other captain said, I'm not going to be the one who didn't give this to Captain Carol Freeman. And that's where this whole other story plot intersects, the stuff that's going down on the planet. Because the Cerritos has a reputation, but it's not the reputation that they think they have.
Yeah, and we will get to that as well. And I enjoyed the Captain Freeman stuff. I thought it was good to see. It's, as I say, it's a small detail, but from what you've picked out there with that attitude and that kind of, you know, the underlying stuff that we're going to talk about shortly, with just how the Enterprise, it's the Cerritos, is the Enterprise of the support ships, which I thought was a great line, by the way. We can talk a little bit about that now. That was just like, that makes so much more sense. We're three seasons in now. They have done a lot for a ship that's meant to be lower down the ranks. And I think that's a perfect way to describe the Cerritos.
I agree. I loved when that was said. I'm just like, that's so true. Because, yeah, you may not be fleet famous, but you're Cali class famous, and that means a lot. Because there are a lot of California class ships, far more than I think people realize. Because there's a lot of cities in California to name them after.
Boimler, Mariner, Rutherford, all down on the planet. We've got Ensign Kearns. And we've got the rest of their crew. The, as I say, the interplay, we can talk broadly about that first. That the kind of subversion that we get through this episode is that we think that they're being, oh, look at us, we're better than you. It's a bit of a competition, on which we quickly find out towards the back end of the episode that that's not the case, that they actually admire the Cerritos and actually kind of idolize them in a way. How did you find that on that reveal and the way that they played that?
I really loved that, because I found it weird that there would be competition between two Cali class ships, but it has, competition has happened before, so it shouldn't have been a surprise, really. But I just thought, I don't know that that's what they're really doing. I just had this feeling like, this feels wrong. This feels wrong to me. Yeah. And then to find out that I was right, that it felt wrong, that that wasn't actually what was going on. But the way that it was presented, it did seem like they were, and they were trying to compete, but they were trying to be as good as the Cerritos team members. And that just warmed my heart so much. It just made me so happy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, they think you're the best because you are to me.
Yeah, from the point of view of us as well, that we've seen their adventures, and, you know, and I think that to us as well, seeing a different perspective, because you wouldn't necessarily think of them in that way, and to flip the tables a little bit and go, actually, you know, you do amazing. You've done this, you've done this, you've done this, you've done this. This happened, the Packlids, this, all this kind of stuff that's going on. You know, I mean, that's big news. So it's not like it's going to be a case of, oh, it's just brushing the carpet. They're doing second contacts and that's all they're doing. There is an element as well that I think the crew actually say that every other Cali-class ship basically follows the rules. And I thought that was intriguing as well, that it takes, there's always that kind of Kirk element, isn't there, of like sort of you have to bend it or break it or do what you need to do to get the job done. And I found that interesting that they're all saying, well, everyone just abides by the rules that we do and you managed to do this. And I thought that was intriguing as well, the way they delivered that.
Well, see, that's the thing. You have to know the rules in order to know when to break them.
Yeah.
And so that's what our Cerritos crew is exceedingly good at, is knowing when to break the rules, which seems like always with the adventures they get up to. I'm sure there are plenty of adventures when they followed protocol perfectly, but
Brandy, should they not trust in Starfleet like they did in episode one?
Well, there's trust in Starfleet, yes, but there's also trust in Starfleet isn't there. You're there. Yeah. You're dealing with the situation. You have to react accordingly because there are going to be situations. There can't be a Starfleet regulation for every situation. It's just not possible because you can't anticipate everything that can possibly happen. And there are infinite combinations of things that can happen. So you have to, that's the whole point of having a good captain, having a good crew, is to know when it's time to break those rules.
Absolutely agree.
I think because they aren't so worried about protocol per se. Yes, they respect it. Yes, they follow it. But when it's down to crunch time, they're like, nope, this is what we're going to do. And they do what needs to be done rather than what protocol says should be done. Because again, protocol can't fix everything.
And that's the slight difference in Lower Decks compared to the other shows as well, with the fact that you do have characters like Boimler, who actually is quite a stick in the mud to the rules, but you've got the people around him who will actually manipulate that, not on purpose. It just kind of happens as a group dynamic of like they end up in these things. And you know, Bo Boimler last week, he's just going to say yes to everything. And I think it was Tendi, wasn't it? Just went, well, that's a plan. That's another plan.
That's still a plan. It's kind of still a plan.
Yeah, it's still a plan. You know, you can't get away from it. I am a bit of a Boimler. I do plan a lot.
I am unapologetically a Boimler. I mean, I have some Tendi tendencies, but Boimler. I'm a Boimler.
But yeah, but I do like it, as I say, the fact that, you know, you've got the Mariner of the World who is kind of like that Kirk-esque stuff, but then you've got the team kind of like sort of move in a direction. And I like that kind of democracy aspect to the show, where there will be things that they end up in because of a particular character, but they follow that at the end of the day. So I do think that's good. What do you make to the broader story context then of the psychic balls that we've got? Because at first we think they're just dreams, and we will talk about Leah Brahms in a second. but we've also got the fact that it's actually collecting more data. It's actually it's all about the data. It's all about everything, not just the dreams and stuff. Again, that feels like a Star Trek trope to me in some episodes that we've seen before about how this kind of happens. So it's very kind of Star Trek feel to it. But what did you make to the actual overall thing of like the whole point of the episode being that they want to collect all this information?
Yeah, it was very Andorian incident from Enterprise.
Yeah.
And that was the thing my husband said before I could get it out. And I'm like, yes, thinking the same thing. Very Andorian incident, except this time it wasn't the Vulcans breaking their rules. But Vulcans don't lie. Sure they don't. They don't ever lie, you guys.
They participate in misinformation, to quote another TV show.
That's basically what they do. so I loved seeing Mariner get embarrassed over her fantasy. But it's interesting. There are things that we now know about Mariner, and I don't know how many people picked up on this, but when the dreams turn into nightmares and we have a giant, you know, Borg snake and, you know, the freaking clowns with batlets for arms, and then we have like this giant wolf, Jennifer, and she's shouting all this stuff about how she wants to live with her forever and grow old together. So Mariner is super afraid of commitment. Yeah. Like, we knew that, but I mean, this is a pervading thing in her character.
Yeah, I think it's grow orchids, wasn't it, as well? We'll grow orchids and we'll do all this together. Yeah, I think that was one of the things I picked up on this episode in my notes, actually, is exactly that. It was like, wow, that's an interesting character. As you say, we've already seen it before, but that is throwing it in our face a little bit of like, wow, this is going to be something they're really going to hone down on now.
I'm not sure where that fear of commitment stems from, but... And that's why she minimizes when, you know, the fantasy Jennifer appears. I loved how the fantasy Jennifer also clapped with her antenna. It's hilarious. She's like, she's not my girlfriend. We're just hanging out. Because she doesn't want to commit to anything specific. She's still having a problem being her true self with people. She has built up a persona, and I think she feels she has to maintain certain aspects of that persona. And the season premiere is one of the first times we've really seen the real Mariner.
Yeah.
I think that little facade is starting to crack, and it will be interesting to see where that goes.
It will. We will talk about Leah Brahms. Leah Brahms appears in this episode. That was a lovely surprise.
In the same outfit.
In the exactly same outfit. I can only imagine what Rutherford has been doing. Has he been on the holodeck, for example? Let me think, he might be mirroring someone else's story.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely. We know what that was a reference to. But obviously, he's an engineer, and she's a very big deal in the engineering world. So, of course, that would be one of his dreams. And the fact that they got the same actor and everything to do the voice, mwah, you guys. You're so great at that.
No, it was great to see and a particularly joyous moment. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, there was also the Leah and Jennifer thing to get together. I'm assuming that might be a Mariner thing. I'm not quite sure where that came from.
Definitely Mariner. Definitely Mariner.
And I think the Borg Snake said something to bring us into the reveal, didn't it? It was kind of, I think it said something like,
hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I've got it written down somewhere. Where have I put that now? Give us your distinctiveness.
Give us your distinctiveness. Yes.
Which, that was the opener to find out that actually they are taking everyone's distinctiveness and instilling it down into like sort of the data and things. And it's the Federation collaboration as well, which again, talking about things that we've seen before in Star Trek, that's another thing that we might have seen in other films and TV shows in Star Trek, where it's actually the scientists and the Federation that's actually joining forces with them to actually get this information together. And it was a nice reveal, and I also like the kind of the joined up nature, because obviously that brings the two crew members, the two crews from different ships.
Yeah.
Together to work together, and thought that worked really well narratively for the rest of the episode.
Agreed. Because, and even Boimler's the one who's like, hey, you know we have a bad reputation, but the Cerritos is a really great ship and a really great crew. And they're like, oh, no, everybody thinks you're the best. Yeah. And just that sort of deer in headlights of, they do? sort of reaction. And they don't get their heads full of it or anything. It's just now everybody's friends and they work together and there's no hard feelings on anyone's side. And that's I love seeing that because that's how humans should interact. Mm. We have not figured that out yet. But humans have a tendency to make everything into a competition. And so, it was nice to see them being friends and it wasn't to, for one team to stab the other in the back later. It just was, let's work together. Let's get this done and respect each other and like each other and be friends.
And speaking of that, did you feel anything for Kern and Boimler on the ship when they went back to the Cerritos? Because I felt there was something there personally.
Possibly. I don't know. I'm not really sure. Because Boimler seems so oblivious.
Well, after episode one, he's definitely oblivious.
Yeah, well, the thing, I have a theory about that. I don't think it was that he was oblivious that these women were throwing themselves at him. I think he knew that it wasn't genuine.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So there may, you know, I think he has difficulty, especially after in season one where he was taken over by that alien.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knows how to know for sure when someone's being genuine, but he certainly knows when they're not.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, definitely. The things I'd say with the basketballs and the things that get through to the data mining aspect of it. But other than that, I think I've covered most of the episode. Is there anything that you think I might have missed at all on that? Is there anything that you want to pick out?
I was really worried about Stevens when he got turned into stone and then knocked over and his arms broke off.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And we do see him later. They do go back to him and he's got his arms up in casts. And I'm like, wow, that must have been really bad if you can't fix that with, you know, your 24th, 25th century, I guess we're 24th century still. Yeah, because usually you don't require a cast for a broken bone, but his arms were literally broken off. So
going to that, actually, because at the time of that competition, it was almost like a basketball game going on where they would pass the orb and the orb would then portray the Jennifer or portray the snake, and it when they were passing each other or passing it over to each other, I thought that worked really well in the dunking. And then Stevens just like fumbles it as he, oh right, okay, it's all about ransom, it's all about ransom, so I'm going to protect his honor. And I did like that as well. It's so nuanced with that, and you know, just the thing that Stevens actually goes that far, gets picked up by that beast, and then gets his arm chopped off, as you say. But it was a good catalyst to use Stevens in that way.
I think, well, Stevens is always a catalyst, isn't he?
Well, yeah.
It's kind of his role.
Yeah, he is, absolutely.
But yeah, that's when stuff got real. Because they're like, okay, now one of our own has been turned into stone, and he's been knocked over, and his arms are off.
He's the Venus de Milo. He's the Venus de Milo of Lower Decks.
Yeah. And this has gotten serious. This is not just, you know, a standard mission now. Something's wrong here. Something's going wrong. Good job, Stevens, for being a catalyst. Thanks for progressing the plot, my dude. Sorry about your arms.
We should put that on a t-shirt. I think the end scene, talking about, as you say, going to the kind of building the mythos, because it is, that's effectively what Cerritos is, isn't it? It's a mythos of that world. The Boimler always seems to get the butt end of the joke, and the fact people perceive him as the tiny comedic robot about work particularly well.
Or a floating cube. Just, oh, poor Boimler. Because, you know, that's the thing. You can't change that. I know that feeling. I know that feeling. People have a certain vision of you, a certain assumption about you, and there is nothing you can do about it. I have been there, and I felt hard for Boimler in the moment. You're still loved, my man. You're okay. It's okay. You can't control what other people think of you. You can only control what you think of you.
Exactly. Only focus on the things you can control is what I say to a lot of people. It's become my mantra at work whenever I'm talking to people. That was basically it. I think, as I say, it's a really, really good episode. Another strong three episodes, strong start to the season. Any final thoughts before we talk about our socials and what we are up to?
I loved seeing two Cali class ships together there. That was fun. And loved the crews working together, which I've already mentioned. I really enjoyed this episode. I was not sure where it was going, but when it really started to ramp up was when they broke some of those orbs and the nightmares started happening. And yeah, they reached into my brain and pulled out some things. Certainly. Please don't do that again, Lower Decks. Thank you. I think it was so well done.
If they have a swarm of killer bees or wasps, then that'll be particular thing.
So. Then I'm dead. Then I'm dead because I'm allergic to bees and wasps. I'm straight up dead. So,
and we don't want that.
No, my husband protects me from buzzy things all the time, and I do call them buzzy things because it doesn't matter if it's a bee or a wasp, if it's got the stripes, if it's got a stinger, I cannot be anywhere near it. So, I'll just be like, buzzy thing, buzzy thing. My husband takes care of it.
Okay, well, can I take that for myself, for my other half, and I'll say to her, buzzy thing. Can I use that?
Absolutely, you do it.
Doing it together, working it out together. That's what we need to do.
Yeah!
Excellent. So thank you again, Brandy, for joining me for this episode of Rarely Going. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
I'd be glad to see you back again. In the meanwhile, though, where can people find you online and what are you up to? You'll be discussing this episode, I'm assuming, elsewhere as well. So, and where can people find you online?
You can find me at Brandywine12 on Twitter. The Brandy's with an I. The 12 is the number 12. And I do a live show generally on Saturday evenings at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. Everybody has phones that have clocks in them, which will tell you what time zone a city's in. Figure it out for yourselves. I'm not going to go through all the time zones. I do that with my good friend Dan Gunther, and it's called The Unready Room. For a variety of reasons. and we talk about each new episode of Star Trek as it happens. Not right the day that it happens. It's a couple of days later. And yeah. We have a great time. We have a live chat that comes and joins us. And you can find that on Dan's YouTube channel, which is Kurt Ratz Productions. Kurt Ratz is just Star Trek spelled backwards. And I have some podcasts. They're too many to mention. I don't want to go through it. But just go to Brandywine 12 and you'll see what I'm doing, but I do other Star Trek podcasts and a podcast with my husband and all sorts of things.
Well, I have the same problem because I'm all over the place, and I've decided that I'm just going to put everything together on a Linktree. So that's where I go now.
Great.
Yeah. So
good job.
Exactly. So Linktree, linktr.ee, and then it's / R Muldrake. It's RMULDRAKE. So you'll see my YouTube channels on there. You'll see my Xcast, the X-Files podcast on there. Star Trek Picard, Make It So, as people might already know on this show. Red Dwarf podcast, like we mentioned before. The Linktree is the best place to go because, again, like yourself, I can be on so many different projects. I even lose factor where I am. So Linktree is the way to go. So thank you, Brandy, for coming along. It's been absolutely a pleasure, as always. Thank you, everyone, for listening and for joining into our discussion here. And until next time, this is the Cerritos signing off.
Three rings for the elven kings under the sky.
Seven for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone.
Nine for mortal men doomed to die.
One for the Dark Lord on his dark throne.
In the land of Mordor, where the shadows lie.
Welcome to One Rules Them All, a Lord of the Rings podcast on the We Made This podcast network. Myself, Luke Winch, and my co-host, Baz Greenland, will be exploring the new Amazon Prime series, The Rings of Power. Week by week, we shall be analysing each episode with a foray of guests. We have also been revisiting the Peter Jackson films and looking at them from a new perspective. So join us every week as we discuss the world of Tolkien and The Rings of Power.
One podcast to rule them all.
One podcast to find them.
One podcast to bring them all.
And on the We Made This Network, bind them.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.